Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black on black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth a crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, and that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, nbpp.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
I won't deny it. I'm a straight rider. You don't wanna fuck with me. Got the police fucking at me. But you can't do nothing to the heat.
Money in a bin, cause bitch, I'm bad broke. I'm smoking bomb ass weed.
It was my only way to rise. Above the jealous cow with motherfuckers out of spies. When it's time to ride, I was the first officer. Give me a nod. I'm ready to die right here tonight. And motherfuck they like. That's what they screaming as they drill me. But I'm hard to kill. So open fire so you kill me. Witness my steel. Sitting in adversaries envious and after me. I'd rather die before they catch me. Watch me bleed. Mama come rescue me. I'm suicidal.
They broke on me, said I ran a stop sign, but that's a lie. I spent my whole life staring at the stage, playing Sega, daddy smoking Sherm, mama playing spades, catching vapors. Grandma said I'd get some Jordans for my grades, that's my baby. When she died, my heart broke 100 ways. I spent my whole life trying to make it, trying to chase it. The cycle of a black man divided, trying to break it. You take a lost shit, don't cry about it, just embrace it. Minor setbacks for major comebacks, that's my favorite. My nigga L said you do a song with Nip, K-Dot, he a better grip. I said he a man first, you hear the words out his lips. Without flourishing from the streets to black businesses. Level 4, y'all living, giving to false imprisonment. Listen close, my nigga, it's bigger than deuces and foes, my nigga. Since elementary, we close, my nigga, you're straight like that. I give you the game, go back to the turf and give it right back. For generations, we've been dealt bad hands with bad plans. Prove your dedication by hopping out Grand Am. I'm at the premiere, politicking with Top Nip and Snoop. Damn, clock watching the way we move. Dedication.
Hold up.
Blah.
This ain't entertainment. Four niggas on a slave ship. These songs just the spirituals I swam against them waves with. Ended up on shore to their amazement. I hope the example I set's not contagious. Lockers behind gates but can't tame us. Used to be stay safe, now stay dangerous. Cause ain't no point playing defense, nigga. That's why I dove off the deep end, nigga, without a life jacket. Couple meals for the world, all my life cracking. Cook the books, bring it back, so it's no taxes. Royalties, publishing, plus our own masters. I'd be damned if I slave for some white crackers. I was mapping this out, I hit the heights backwards. Topping out the 85 and Reebok classics. Read a couple marathons just to get established. To make it happen, you got to have dedication. Hard work, plus patience. To some more of my sacrifice, I'm done waiting. I'm done waiting, told you that I wasn't playing. Now you hear what I've been saying. Dedication. Dedication. Ah!
Black power, black power, black power. You are listening to the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense nightly broadcast. I am your host, Mr. Crystal Muhammad, coming to you live from the belly of the beast here in America, KKK. We want to send a shout-out to everyone that's listening to our broadcast in the motherland of Africa and all the many countries in Africa that are up late listening to tonight's broadcast. Shouts out to folks who are supporting the new Black Panther Party in Central America, South America, the Caribbean Islands, UK, Canada, Australia, Japan, China, Russia, all of these places that are popping up on the stat board. But last and not most definitely not least, shouts out to everyone here in America, KKK, in the belly of the beast that's listening to this broadcast. Tonight, brothers and sisters, last night we said that we were going to have a part two. Brother Malik Mau Mau coming on. Unfortunately, the situation has happened to he will not be back on until next Sunday. But we are sending out our prayers to the comrade and his family. With everything that's going on here in America, we need to make sure that we're checking on our brothers and sisters consistently. We need to make sure that we're, you know, looking out and raising the frequency of how we're communicating with one another. And most definitely, first and foremost, we need to be taking care of ourselves and taking care of our families. I mean, if you can't save the world without first saving yourself, taking care of your home and your own livelihood. So tonight, brothers and sisters, what I'm going to do, we're going to play some clips. I know on different nights we play clips when we don't have special guests. As many of us are in the field, working on different things in the Black Nation and on business. But on this broadcast, we make sure that we are currently and constantly bringing political education to you. And the political education clips that we play, you know, we've taken our time to make sure that we upload, you know, the great scholars, you know, that have something to bring to the table. And, you know, so we make it a point throughout the week to host these political education lectures and roundtables to stimulate discussion, you know. So with that being said, over the last couple of nights, we've heard a couple of references to the great Amos Wilson. In fact, our National Minister of Culture referenced Dr. Amos Wilson. And what we want to encourage the brothers and sisters who are listening is to go ahead and purchase that book that Dr. Amos Wilson put out entitled The Blueprint for Black Power. So we're gonna play some clips from Dr. Amos Wilson tonight, but I wanted to start off with some music and also give our Minister of Culture and the Princess a time to set this show off with the right energy. Black Power, Brother Greg, let her rip, let her rip.
Black Power!
One more time, Princess.
Wakare!
Ooh, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. So tonight's lecture series that we're going to play, Brother Greg, after we say our few words, is from Dr. Amos Wilson, and it's entitled "The Personality of Black People." The personality of Black people. Now y'all know we something else, right? We are some characters. You just kick back and just sit back and just think about our Black people. Boy, we got some full characters. But hey, we are dynamic people. We've been through so much. We've been through something that no people have ever went through. And even if us coming out of, you know, people trying to destroy us, they were never able to do that. You know, and so we're going to dive into some of these personality things that are going on. We want to make an announcement. We want everybody to mark your calendar. This Friday, there's going to be a 12-hour marathon fundraiser for Brother Ozone that's going to be aired on OC The Great Show, a 12-hour marathon on OC The Great Show. The New Black Panther Party will be taking a time slot from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Central, so that is, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern, and at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific time. So we're going to be broadcasting not only from our radio show, but we're going to be simultaneously broadcasting from our radio show onto the OC The Great Show. So we're still trying to raise money for Brother Ozone. He still is in need of getting the money for a proper legal defense, as he's been charged now with the capital murder because he defended himself when he was wrongfully approached and accosted by the enemy in his yard. You know what I'm saying? So with that being said, we know how many people's lives, when they come in contact, you know, with these pigs, never, you know, live to tell the story. But unfortunately, our brother Ozone was able to live through this incident. But allegedly, you know, the pig did not make it. So with that being said, brothers and sisters, we have a broadcast that we're going to be doing in support of Brother Ozone on this Friday, November the 19th, on OC The Great Program. Now, you know, that program is heavily scrutinized and watched. So, you know, we want to make sure that we come on and support our brothers and, you know, remind everybody of how important it is that we raise money to support Brother Ozone, as his life is literally on the line. So, reminder, that special broadcast is going to channel the New Black Panther Party Radio. We will be doing a dual simulcast. We're going to be broadcasting live from our radio show, as well as doing a live YouTube on OC The Great TV network. On tomorrow, on Tuesday, we will have our regular Tuesday special, Akiba Lawn News, hosted by Tutmos Sankara, who's going to give us the updates on what's going on with our political prisoners of the Black Liberation Nation, as well as giving us insight on what's going on the continent of Africa and throughout the diaspora. And then, as you know, on Thursday night, we have the New African Network, in which Brother Eugene Telfer comes on and brings a lot of dynamic guests and speakers who are directly engaged in the Industrial Revolution of the motherland of Africa. And he also gives us a lot of insight that's going on the continent. So two special nights where you get to hear the politics, the news, the business, the current events, and have a discussion on not only our plight here in America, but making that connection with Africa. And so with that being said, we're going to have our new Minister of Culture say a few words, and then we're going to play the clips from Dr. Amos Wilson, and tomorrow we'll come back with that special show. Brother Greg, you have the floor. King, you got something you want to say right quick?
Black Power, yep, real quick. That's we got a great lineup, you know, this week and every week. Definitely everybody tune in, mark your calendars for our regular shows now, and definitely this Friday for our brother Ozone. But tonight should be some great clips. Get those pens and those papers, you know, those notebooks out. Take some good notes. We all know Amos Wilson, you know, wrote that Bible for us, you know, that blueprint for Black Power. But he also wrote a host of other books, you know, that definitely need to be invested in if you guys don't have it or have them already. But, you know, looking forward to it. Looking forward to the rest of this week. Oh, yes, she is.
Black Power.
All right, yes, you got to chime in. All right, but yeah, definitely. Always in the background. But yep, should be. Let's definitely get those pens and papers out. You know, take some good notes. I'm working on a couple of, you know, topics myself, just to give a tad bit. I've been in my Anthony Browder mode, you know, digging in a lot of the archives. Our great elder, Clemson Brown has, you know, of Anthony Browder. Definitely, if you guys can check out, you know, his YouTube channel, Transatlantic Productions, you'll see the tip of the iceberg of what he has, you know, up there. But be a great, great, great show tonight. Black Power.
Black Power. All right, so let's do it. Let's get into Dr. Amos Wilson and this type of, oh, snap, I'm sitting there messing with these buttons. Messing with these buttons. The topic is the personality of black people. Let's do it.
If we say that the patterns of behavior that the individual learns in coping with the environment, then we can infer from that then that the kind of environment the individual inhabits will influence the kind and patterns of behavior he will evidence as a person. An individual then who is seeking for power, who then wants to create people so that they would have a definite relationship to him, will say then that the first thing I must control is what? The environment. I must create an environment, because the individual, if he's to survive in that environment, must learn to cope with it. And if it's a tough environment, he must learn to be tough if he's going to make it. If it's an environment that requires him to hustle, then he's got to learn how to hustle. And he's got to learn how to, and yet, after he learns all of these things, they're going to become a part of his personality. And in ways they're going to help him, and in ways they're going to stand against him. And therefore, if I create the environment, I can, to a good extent, create the individual. And therefore, the people in power will read the statement, and they will go back to their planning boards and say, how can I create the environment such that black people will be dumb? They will be ignorant. They will hate themselves. They will lack disunity in their relationships one with the other. They will see me as the final validator of truth. They will see my acceptance as the ultimate acceptance. How can I create in them that mentality? And you will see them then creating the appropriate environment. The invasion of this community by Asians and other ethnic groups is a part of the creation of the mentality and personality of black people. It's going to create your children out here. As they walk down these blocks, their personality is being formed as they learn to so-called cope and deal with this situation out here. And to the extent that we sit back and let it happen, to that extent, we're participating also in their creation. It goes on to say, for social learning theorists, behavior is the result of a continuous interaction between personal and environmental variables. Environmental conditions shape behavior through learning. A person's behavior, in turn, shapes the environment. There's a reciprocal relationship. We create the environment, and we create a behavior. Orientation. And then the person with the behavior orientation, what? Recreates his environment. You put him in a slum, and then he develops slummy behavior. And then once he develops slummy behavior, he will make slums wherever he goes. And then we will say that he's a slummy person by nature. You know, that's the game. Create that environment. So it's to create the personality. And you see, it's a slick game. And often you see, as people, we are not aware of the first creation. How was the first creation brought about? The only thing we often see is the result of the creation. And we see ourselves behaving in a certain sort of way. And the other group then says, you behave that way because you're black. You behave that way because you're African. You see? And when you fail then to see how the situation was created, then one begins to condemn himself in terms just of himself. And this is why knowledge of how the situation was created is very, very important. This is why ultimately when one gets to know himself, he gets to know other people. You cannot know yourself well and not know other people and ultimately know the universe. The route to getting to know the universe and to getting to know what is going on in the world is through the self, ladies and gentlemen. Because as I stated before, the self is the result of the universe we live in. And therefore, self-knowledge means getting to know self-creation. And when other people have created the self that one is, then it means getting to know those other people and getting to know how they went about their creation. And that's very important to the recreation of oneself in terms of one's own criteria and one's own values. But unless you get there, and this, you see, is an essential part of African education. The white people don't have to learn this. They don't need to learn this. So therefore, they do not include this knowledge into their curriculum. They do not see it as an important part of education. And a black person then who does not include this as an important part of their education is going to be educated into ignorance and stupidity. And a black person who sees this kind of education as a stop course, as a, what do you call them, elective, of course you pick up on the side, is one that's going to be miseducated. This is the very foundation and basis of any sound education and should occur first, not second, not in the third year of college, not in the last year of college, but should occur in the very first semester, should occur really in the very first years of elementary school and work themselves right on up. And so we have it here. The environmental conditions shape behavior through learning. A person's behavior in turn shapes the environment. Persons and situations influence each other reciprocally. To predict behavior, we need to know how the characteristics of the individual interact with the characteristics of the situation. Now, I've often told people the point of psychology, European psychology, is control. You know, a lot of people talk about psychology not being so-called science and not being able to predict behavior the way chemistry and mathematics. That's off the point. That's really not the point of it at all. Because the point of psychology in the Eurocentric sense is not really to describe man as he is, but to learn the ways and means of controlling man to the benefit of the European. That's the basic point. And when you can create people, when you can control people, then your problem of prediction is what? It's solved, ladies and gentlemen. It's solved. You see? So when you remove people, you remove certain thinking skills from people, when you induce into them certain emotional orientations, when you keep away from them certain intelligence in terms of knowledge, you're creating a personality and you can begin to predict how those people are most likely to behave under certain circumstances. You know what they are, what capable of doing. You see? And therefore, as a Eurocentric psychologist, what you're mainly concerned with is not so much predicting the behavior, but creating the possibilities of some behaviors and the impossibilities of others. And so the main thing you're concerned with is the technique by which this is accomplished, because the prediction part will pretty much take care of itself. And so we have it right here. To predict, we need to know how the characteristics of an individual interact with the characteristics of the situation. You have to interpret this Afrocentrically, you see. Now, many courses will read it and run it through just like that and leave it at that. But see, the white boy, that's all he needs. He doesn't need the other part, the part that I've just talked to you about right now. Because, you see, while he's in the college, his dad is another that already manipulated the world. You see, and when he gets out, he will enter into that system and learn the real information. But the black one who will learn it as well or better will still be in a position of powerlessness, you see, because often he has not read between the lines, and often because he's discriminated against, he will not get into the very center of power where he can see the real deal. And so he'll be left with his theoretical propositions, and he'll be proud of his unrealistic learning. and he will talk about it and think that his degree, because it is equal to some white man's degree, that it has equal potency, and it does not. It has very little meaning. In fact, that is a part of the deception as well. It goes on to say, reinforcement and social learning. The effect of other people, the rewards and punishments they provide, is an important influence on an individual's behavior. Very potent statement there, isn't it? In fact, that is a power statement, isn't it? Yeah, it's a power statement. Infused throughout this whole thing is, how do you gain power and influence over other people? How do you manipulate other people? This is a manual about power. Of course, it isn't written that way, is it? It's pure, bland, objective, non-racial psychology. Nonsense. There is no course that's non-political. That is the greatest deception run upon black people, that courses are non-political. That is the most political statement of all. Oh, this is an objective course. It has nothing to do with race, then. I'm in the wrong course. According to social learning theory, individual differences in behavior result in large part from differences in the kinds of experiences encountered, listen, in the course of growing up. Do we hear that? Very powerful statement here. But it says individual differences, and when I use the word individual, think of group. This is another deception that is run on black people, particularly in psychology. Because often the psychology is projected as being about individuals. You see, and often the black student then thinks in terms of individuals and consequently is restricted in what he learns. When you're in these courses and they talk about individual, elevate them up to the group level. You see, because it's to the advantage of the white man in a sense while he's educating you at the same time to lower your consciousness to talk about individuals, see, so that you can think that we're just concerned with single entities and not with what? Peoples and the relationships of people one to the other. And if you don't deliberately and consciously say, wait a minute, let me think about this in terms of groups, then you're caught and miseducated right at that point, even though you know the principle well. It says individual differences, but let's substitute the word group. Group differences in behavior result in large part from differences in the kinds of learning experiences encountered in the course of growing up. In other words, then, the differences in groups, to a good extent, is the result of the kind of learning experiences they have encountered. So, if you want to create group differences, what do you create? You create differences in their what? Learning experiences. That is why the European, in order to create the African man, must also restrict the African experience, must restrict the kinds of experiences you have. Because an experience is not just an emotional kind of situation, it is a learning situation. An experience becomes often a permanent part of the personality. So you must see experience as learning, okay, not just an emotional effect, but as a learning. When you're in a classroom, you are having an experience. We call that experience learning, but nevertheless, it's an experience. Any kind of experience can be a learning situation. So consequently, if the European is to produce group differences in behavior, he then must have control over the experiences people undergo. And therefore, when they experience poor housing, when they experience poor food, non-nutritional food, when they experience poor schooling, when they experience adverse economic circumstances, when they experience the degradation and scandalization of their character, when they experience the kinds of things we talk about here daily in this community, then you're going to get a difference in group behavior. And you will see then that this experience is deliberately designed to create a deliberate personality in black people. Some of you heard me talk about the rat, and this social learning theory is based on what we call rat psychology. And it's very interesting, by the way, why in these psych books you have talk about rats and dogs. Because often the unaware African thinks that that's what the whole deal is about, rats and dogs. Another consciousness controlling tool. And as soon as you mention conditioning, somebody will jump up, oh, the Pavlovian dog. Either they're going to immediately show you how smart they are in terms of the Pavlovian dog. You see? And how smart they are about the rat and you know, the skin of ox. But if you talk to them for a whole night, they never quite get around to how it is that we are the Pavlovian dog. And that we are the rats. We never see that part. And yet, look at it, ladies and gentlemen. When we talk about the so-called skin of rat, it's a rat taken out of its natural habitat, placed in a box. It is placed in a condition, a new set of conditions, a new environment. It's going to have experiences in that box it has never had before in its life. It must learn to survive in that box and cope with that box. It must learn to push that lever in order to eat. It has never had to do that before. Never. But it's got to learn. It's got to learn that when the yellow light comes on, it can push the lever and get food. But when the green one comes on, no food is coming. It has to learn that it can get food every time it pushes the lever, or it gets food every fifth time it pushes the lever, or the 15th time it pushes the lever, or it gets food every 5 minutes, and you can just manipulate its behavior around and around and around. The experimenter says, okay, you're not going to get eaten until you hit the bar 5 times, 15 times. And sometimes you can see the rat even learns that, you know. It just doesn't hit the food sometimes steadily. You may hit it fast 15 times. Or the experimenter says, I'm going to feed you every 5 minutes regardless of how many times you hit the bar. And that rat will get a sense of time. Toward the end of that 5 minutes, it will start hitting the bar. You see? And you can manipulate and change its behavior in terms of how you're going to reward it and how you're going to punish it. It knows something now, and it behaves now in a way that no other rat behaves. It has learned something new. Why? Because it has been placed under a set of conditions. It has learned to adjust to those conditions and to cope with those conditions. If it went back to its natural habitat, it would be a strange rat, I'm telling you. And we know sometimes how so-called tamed animals, as a result of their social interaction with human beings, are unable to even survive in their natural environment because of the way they've had to survive in their natural environment. And so what we recognize in the Skinner experiment is this, that the rat not only lives in a condition and in an environment, the environment and the condition does what? Lives in the rat. And the rat is an expression of its environment. As a matter of fact, the environment and conditions speak through the rat and literally uses its body to express itself. And this is why often we can hear some people talk, the way they dress, the way they walk, and tell where they're from. Because we not only live in a neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen, the neighborhood does what? It lives in us. It expresses itself through us. We are its vehicle. It comes out through us. So consequently, when another people shape your neighborhood, and they shape your schools, and they shape the experiences you have, they are in the process then of creating us as human beings. We have to recognize that. This is why the black student has to look at the rat not as a rat, but as a prototype of himself. And if he does not see that rat that way, he's been miseducated. I don't care how many A's he makes equal to the white boy, he's been miseducated. And yet the white man has sat right there and told him exactly how he's doing. Exactly. No bones about it. And I often tell my students, look at this rat and this experimenter, not from the point of view of the way it's written in the book, So consequently, when another people shape your neighborhood and they shape your schools and they shape the experiences you have, they are in the process then of creating us as human beings. We have to recognize that. This is why the black student has to look at the rat not as a rat, but as a prototype of himself. And if he does not see that rat that way, he's been miseducated. I don't care how many A's he makes equal to the white boy, he's been miseducated. And yet the white man is sat right there and told him exactly how he's doing it. Exactly. No, no, no bones about it. And I often tell my students, look at this rat and this experimenter, not from the point of view of the way it's written in the book, but look at it as a power relationship. The experimenter is able to create the behavior in this rat as a result of the power that the experimenter has over it. Because there's a power differential there, isn't it? Yeah, there's a power differential there. Look at it as a political situation where the experimenter has control over when that rat is going to eat, how it's going to eat, what it's going to eat, when it's going to get fed, and all of the other things. And through the manipulation of those things, manipulates the rat's behavior, but ultimately creates its personality. And then I go back and say, let us see then in your community, who controls your water? Who controls your food? Who controls your jobs? Who controls your symbols, your status symbols? Who controls the pay? And you will recognize then that through this control and through the power over vital things like food and water and shelter and jobs, we are created as a people. Through the vital ability of this white man as the experimenter to reinforce the kind of behavior he wants to reinforce and to punish the kind of behavior he wants to punish, he creates black people and African people the world over. And it's not black people in America. It's black people in the Caribbean. It's black people in South America. It's black people in Africa and Asia and wherever you find them. When he says, I'm not going to give you this loan this time. Or, starve your people, but you got to pay Chase Manhattan Bank. Oh, you mean your people are going to rise up in rebellion? Well, we'll send you aid in the form of police weapons so you can shoot them down in the streets as they riot about the price of rice, because you got to pay us. And therefore, you become a bill collector for the system itself. And therefore, the monies that you can use to build schools and other things for your children now must be used to feed the fat cats. And therefore, the children are made ignorant, and the children are made without education, and the economy lags, and a whole social political system is created that ultimately works itself into the very personality of the people in that system. And those people, to a good degree then, are created. It is only then when we begin to look at these situations from that point of view that these sort of bland lessons you see here have real meaning for us as people. And so what we are saying here then, ultimately, when we look at the so-called social learning theory, we are saying then that it is the nature of the social relationships between men, between people, that to a good degree helps to determine the characteristics of us as persons and as groups and as people as a whole. That is why we must be concerned about the nature of the social relationships we have with other people. Now then, this is the preface to the induction of self-hatred. And we're going to continue it as a short, and I'm going to end shortly, but I just want us to understand what we're dealing here. It's not enough to say that the whites induce self-hatred into us. I want us to see how this is achieved through the power and the ability of the white man to manipulate reinforcements, the ability of the white man, an ability that we to a good degree has let him have and challenge to manipulate reinforcement that is going to make our self-hatred possible. Because we just don't hate ourselves by accident. that hatred is deliberately induced because it serves a political, social, economic purpose. But that self-hatred cannot come about merely in terms of what white folks say about us, the white attitudes toward us. It must be related to power. It must be backed up by the ability to punish and the ability to reward. And therefore, what is said, when it is combinated with power, then becomes the vehicle through which self-hatred is induced. I'm going to, in the following lectures then, look at the various means by which self-hatred is deliberately induced in black people. We're going to talk, I'll list some of them right quickly to indicate where we're going. And we'll talk a bit about the first one here. The association of innate personal group characteristics with negative assignations. We're going to talk about if that's not enough, that is, if creating self-hatred through just making a person's innate characteristics negative or be perceived as negative, then one creates the characteristics. In other words, you create the characteristics that you hate. And this often happens, of course, in parental relationships and other relationships, where, in a sense, you make the person into something. You make them a thief, and then you hate them for being a thief. You see? And to a good extent, what has happened to the African personality is he's created. A character is created so that that character can be hated, so that that character can be used as a justification for exploitation and misuse and abuse. And we want to look then at that method and that technique. And this is quite a complicated one. Followed up by the fact that you can induce self-hatred through what we call making positive, desirable characteristics unattainable, therefore creating an inferiority complex, self-negation through social comparison. And so forth, white. And make it only attainable by whites, then you induce self-hatred by those people who cannot make themselves white. And so often then, one of the ways of creating self-hatred in an individual is putting those things that will get him out of that self-hatred out of his reach. And we will see that that is one of the methods. To create a reverse mentality and behavior, and to create desires by punishing the right orientation and by rewarding the wrong orientation. In other words, we're going to talk about how the black personality is reversed and turned backwards so that the individual will almost by habit produce backward behavior. We're going to talk about this producing of backwardness, which produces frequent failures or success by accident, which produces a feeling of cursedness. We're going to also then talk about de-individuation as a method of creating self-hatred. That is, reducing the individual's concept of himself as an individual. Also, the creation of maladjustment through a number of techniques. In our next section, then, we're going to look at the first segment here, the association of innate ethnic personal characteristics with negative assignations. You will see in the Bible itself that Adam, in this mythological account, is given control over creation by being given the power to name and classify all that is on the earth. In a sense, when God tells Adam that it is his prerogative to name and classify, he symbolically now is giving him control over the earth. The ability to name and define is a very powerful ability. And one of the major powers that the European has that we have got to take back is the European power of definition, of naming and determining what is real and what is unreal. One of the constants that I talk about, that is, I often try to get across the idea that despite how much things appear to change, they remain the same. And that we as people must not be deceived by superficial change. That often superficial change is deliberately created as a way of maintaining fundamental sameness. You must look at the real power relationship between Europeans and Africans. That is the key. And you must question whether that power relationship has changed at all over the past 400 or 500 years. You just cannot look at the idea that you're now in slavery and say that means we have advanced in some sort of way. Or that now we have certain job opportunities open to us, educational opportunities open to us, that now we can eat at the same counter with white folk and all of this kind of stuff as indicative of basic fundamental change. As a matter of fact, to a good extent, these changes have been diversions to keep us from seeing that the very fundamental relationship between blacks and whites has not changed at all. I've often said that you may marvel about how now you can get a degree in computer technology and how this was not available to your forefathers. But remember that your forefathers as slaves also had skills. They just did not chop cotton and work in the households. They were skilled craftsmen as slaves. And in fact, at the end of slavery, there were more black craftsmen and skilled craftsmen in some areas than there were whites. But what was the fundamental relationship? The fundamental relationships was that these skilled slaves worked for the benefit and power of their masters. And that fundamental relationship has not changed one whit today, ladies and gentlemen. You do computer engineering, but you're going to do it for IBM, and you're going to do it for GE, and you're going to do it for some white man ultimately. It's the same game, ladies and gentlemen. You may hang out in the same office. You may even marry them. You may even sleep with them. You may eat with them. But the fundamental power relationship is what? Still the same. Still the same. This hasn't changed. And the thing you have to look at then is, are not those superficial changes, but the fundamental relationship. And there are several of them that you will see have existed for the past 300, 400, 500 years and that are still pretty much where they are today. And that even integration and even assimilation and even at the eating at the same lunch counter and even the electing of black men to office and black women to office, even the electing of one to the presidency of the United States is going to serve the same function, to maintain the ultimate power of the white man over the black man. And therefore, you cannot be deceived by those things. And this comes out of this ability of this white man to name and create definition. One of the books I would recommend for the reading list is the book White Over Black, by Winthrop Jordan, a very copiously detailed book, and one I think you should certainly read. And I'll be indicating some others, of course. And this one I'm sure is still around. I don't know whether this one is available in the general market. Yes, and we have some of them here. The Negro's Image in the South by Claude H. Nolan, L-O-L-E-N, The Anatomy of White Supremacy. And, of course, the one that I intended to quote from extensively tonight, Franz Fanon's book, Black Skin, White Mask, which I highly recommend that you read. And, of course, while you're reading these now, read some others because they can be a bit depressing, but you want to look at them very closely. So, you know, read Diop's African Contributions to Civilization, Pre-Colonial Africa, Introduction to African Civilizations by Jackson, and some of the others have sort of, waited out a little bit. In a way to support the dominant system, and in this instance to support white domination. So it becomes very important that whatever we talk about it in context. Because the major ruse that is used in the academies is to decontextualize subject matter. That is to take subject matter out of context and to project it as race neutral and objective. So, as a matter of fact, when you read your newspapers, you will see the same kind of game going on. You will get discussions of black-on-black violence, the homicide among our young men, and you will get half explanations or half-truths, such as these young men are killing each other because of the availability of guns. You know, somehow it's just the mere availability of guns that's causing black-on-black homicide, or just the selling of drugs, or other half explanations. We have to watch out for that, because often the other half is the most important one, the one that is left out. How are the guns distributed? Who manufactures them? Who sells them? And the whole bit. Who imports the drugs? Who distributes the drugs? Or it's the cause of poverty. Crime is caused by poverty, caused by poor family background. We get a whole plethora of these kind of half-truth definitions. These guns are made available within a social political context. Drugs are made available within a social political context. Families are broken apart within a social political context. Poverty is created within a social political context. Poor education is the result of a social political context, ladies and gentlemen. And we must constantly then look at that context and see how it creates the conditions of which we complain so much. We must then recognize, as we begin to look at black upon black violence, we must see that violence and its connections to a racist society. And we must come to understand what a racist society is about. We use that term so often without analyzing it very well. And we must recognize essentially then that a racist society is about structuring social and political, economic circumstances, psychological and cultural circumstances, such that one race can take advantage of another, and one race can enhance itself at the expense of another. It has little to do with overt race hatred or with negative racial attitudes or with the projection of racial stereotypes or, as Brother Harris says, with whites not understanding the nature of their racism. That's not it. And when you define it in terms of attitude, you'll find yourself then solving the wrong problems. These people will stop expressing those negative attitudes, you see. They will smile more regularly at you. They will even marry you and go to bed with you, sleep with you. But you will note that the effects of racism, the effects of poverty and all of these other things will continue. But not only do they continue, they increase. Ultimately, you must recognize that racism involves the power of one race to impose its will upon another. That ultimately, then, it is about power. And we have to face that fact. Whites engage in racism because they have the power to do so. And if we are to end white racism, then we must end white power. We use the word imperialistic society and imperialism often, also without looking at it very deeply and looking at the term very deeply. Imperialism of empire. Speaking then of a group of people who through various means have acquired and maintained an empire, who maintain and exploit control over populations much larger than themselves. We heard a reference here tonight about this population being 5%, the white population here of the world,
and about the total European population being about 10%, yet in control of 80% of the world's economic resources and in control of the other 90% of the world's populations. You're talking about empire then, ladies and gentlemen. And what does that imply? That means then you have a small population that is ruling over populations that are much, much, much larger than it is. And of course, we don't have time to talk about the psychology of this, but I've often indicated that this can only be possible when that small population maintains the larger populations in a state of false consciousness and in a state of deception. That this small population can only maintain control over those larger populations by outright lying and the falsification of reality. But recognize, in essence then, in terms of the problems we are talking about here this evening, the Colin Powells, the black soldiers in the armies, you have to recognize that the essential nature of imperialism is that due to the fact that the imperialist group or nation that runs the empire is so small compared to the empire, it must of necessity recruit from the very population it rules in order to control that empire. When you study the history of imperialism, particularly the history of imperialism as regards African people, which has been going on now for over 2,000 years, when you look at the history of imperialism and colonialism on the African continent, and you study Chancellor Williams' books, and you look at the history of imperialism in Africa, you cannot help but recognize that non-European imperialism and European imperialism has been aided by Africans who were recruited into the armies of the imperialistic masters and were used to practice black upon black violence against their African brothers in the name of their European masters. So then when I talk about black upon black violence in this book, or we talk about the young men and women in the U.S. Army today, recognize then that we are talking about nothing new, but something that is continuous with the very essence and nature of imperialism and racism. Recognize also that when we talk about black-on-black violence, we are talking about a violence that violence produced. That black-upon-black violence is reflective of white-on-black violence. And that ultimately it reflects the violence that this Eurocentric and European community has practiced upon black people and our reactions to that violence. When we then talk about a racist society, an imperialistic society, recognize then that we are talking about a crimogenic society. What do we mean by crimogenic society? Of course, racism is a crime. A crime against humanity and a crime against our race. Imperialism is a crime against our race as well. And therefore, when you have a racist society and an imperialistic society, you have a crimogenic society. What do we mean then by a crimogenic society? Of course, dealing with the word genesis, we are talking about the idea of generating the beginning, as in the word Genesis, to begin, the source of, the point of creation of. So when we talk about this society as a crimogenic society, we are talking about this society then as the source of crimes, as the generator of criminality, as the creator of criminals, a society that is run by criminals, and a society then that ultimately criminalizes its population and criminalizes the total system. I had a piece here, you know, there's some of you here who are middle class and you think you're nice. You think you're non-criminal. A criminal society criminalizes all of its constituents. I don't have time tonight to read to you the justification for that piece. Oh, there's some of you who've been in the church and you think you're good. Read in Black on Black Violence where I talk about your dumb goodness. A goodness that maintains sin and criminality. We don't have time to talk about it tonight. You're in the church, but you're guilty too. Because you see, ladies and gentlemen, when the leadership of a nation lies to that nation, when it deceives that nation, when it miseducates that nation and falsifies facts, it falsifies the consciousness of the people who inhabit that nation. And when it falsifies their consciousness, it recruits those of its people into its criminality. So whether you know it or don't know it, you're a part of the game. Oh yes, we have to confront our responsibility for this criminal situation as well. Yes, we do. Whether you're looking at us as so-called middle class, remember those of you who are making it in this society, who are making great profits, great accomplishments, sitting at the same tables with your white masters. That you're sitting and profiting from the death and murder and destruction of your ancestors. That as you eat with your white masters, you are eating the flesh and spirits of your people. You can cover it up and lie to yourself and claim it's your individual striving that got you where you're going. That you are taking advantage of opportunity. But remember, these opportunities were based on the death and destruction of African people and the continuing death and destruction of African people. Those of you rolling around in the church and carrying on in the same position as well. But let me continue. This society is a society of criminals, run by criminals, and it is a creator of criminals. And we must recognize it. And I have to say that because we got some people out here who say, I want my children to be just like them. That's the ultimate goal. I don't want there to be any differences. What are you talking about? You want them to be enslavers, rapists, and robbers, and killers, and murderers, and imperialists, and so forth, just like the other folk, right? Think again, ladies and gentlemen. But due to our time, I'm just going to have to rush through here. I accuse the society of being a crimogenic society, a criminal society, a society that engages in white on black violence for a number of reasons. And of course, as you can tell, often the psychology of an individual or people in terms of their origins and early childhood experiences, you can look at then the psychology of a people in terms of their origins and early childhood of their race. And when we look then at the origins of this society, we must immediately recognize that it is a society founded on criminal activities. Yes, and that is this inheritance today. It is still a part of it. A society that is a crimogenic society and a society that engages on white, on black violence because it is founded on the murder and theft of Indian peoples and Indian lands. It is a crimogenic society, a criminal society, and a society that practices white on black violence because it is a society founded on the kidnapping of African people, the manslaughter of African people in the mid-passage, the extortion from African people of their labor, and the enslavement of African people. Therefore, the very nature and foundations of this society rest on two massive genocidal crimes. And this original crime is a part of its nature today. It is a crimogenic society because this group of people cannot face their own criminality. They must engage in the psychology of denial and repression and distortion. And this denial and distortion and repression must suffuse throughout the total society, throughout its total institutions, throughout its total values, and therefore ultimately it must pervert its total population. It is a criminal society and a white-on-black violent society because it engages in the crime of breach of contract. It has breached the contract of its constitution. It breached the contracts it made with African people during the Reconstructions. It breached its contracts of the 14th, 15th, and other amendments. It breached its contracts in reversing its rulings in the 1860s, 1870s, 1980s, and 1990s. It breached its contract in terms of sharecropping, the peonage of our people, going back on the 40 acres and a mule, and all the rest of the things. It is a criminal society because it constantly engages in the assault and battery against its black populations. It engaged in historical lynching, and behind the walls, as my brother mentioned here, of prisons, it still now engages in legal lynchings of African people. It engages in Klan terrorism, which it's still engaged in today. It engages in race riots where it destroys the African people. It engages in police riots, and it engages in police brutality where over 300 or more of our young men and women have been destroyed in the city of New York alone. It is a criminal society, and it is a crimogenic society, and a society that engages in white-on-black violence because it is indicted on the charges of official malfeasance when it revokes its mandate in terms of giving justice to its people and makes its justice system an instrument of injustice, when its so-called rehabilitative system is a school for criminality. It engages in official malfeasance when it rigs its juries, when it legally lynches the ones it so woefully sentences. It engages in official malfeasance when it engages in gerrymandering of black districts, when it betrays the mandates of black voters, when it builds, as my brother mentioned here, prisons as industries so that the incarceration of black men becomes a profit-making industry and a means by which the ruling class makes war against the subordinate classes. It engages in criminal activity, and it is a criminal society when it engages in unfair labor practices, job discrimination, when at the end of the Reconstruction there were more black skilled workers than there were whites, and the whites unionized to keep the blacks from taking advantage of the opportunities that were available to them. It is indicted for labor racketeering when it runs black men away from its construction sites, when we go into a black community where housing is supposedly being made and built for black residents, and we see few, if any, black men building those houses. And when those black men come to work on those sites, they are chased away by the police and the construction workers. And when they are chased away and made to stand on the corners, then they are accused of refusing to work and desiring not to work. We accuse this society of being a crimogenic society, of being a criminal organization, of being an organization that engages in chronic white-on-black violence, when it engages in drug trafficking, when it imports the drugs that poisons our neighborhoods and destroys the consciousness of our people, destroys their health. We see a criminogenic people from way back engaging in the selling of opium to the Chinese and in engaging in opium wars. We see this drug trafficking group of people engaging in alcohol addiction when they used it to destroy Indians, when they used it to destroy African chiefs who, under the influence of the alcohol, often signed away their peoples and their nations. We accuse it of drug addiction and drug trafficking when it traded guns for drugs to carry on its warfare in Central and South America. We accuse it of being a criminal nation, a criminal people, a criminal nation, a crimogenic society, when it engages in gun running across the world, when it sells the very weapons that will be used to destroy its own sons and daughters. We accuse it of criminality when it acts to maintain an evil military-industrial complex. We accuse it of being a criminal society when it sells its death wares across the world. How many of us recognize that we are dealing here with merchants of death? That these people are dead and deadly. People who are robbing black people at home so that they can rob black people abroad. We accuse this nation of being a crimogenic society and the ruling white population of being a criminal people, because they engage in economic extortion, taxation of black people without representation, the redlining of black communities as they steal the savings and investment of black people, as they disinvest in the black community, as they do not return loans to the black community and use the monies that the black communities and the black church place in their coffers to export jobs out of the community into suburbs beyond the black, to the reach of the black population, when they export jobs outside of the country totally and starve our black men and women in Detroit and the other urban centers of this world. We accuse them of economic extortion when they deindustrialize this nation and ship out the blue-collar jobs that maintain the families of black people across this country and ship them to other places and exploit the other populations of this world. We accuse them of imperial criminality and of organized crime. This nation is an organized mafia operation. I have indicated to you that it is best when you look at the international situation that you will come away with a better understanding if you apply the concepts of mafia psychology to the international relations that are going on right now and that have been going on. we don't have time to talk about a chapter I do in here that I call quantifying the myth. You know, the myth of making black people appear to be more criminal than white people. A myth that is statistically supported by the number of black men and women arrested, by the number of black men and women incarcerated, by the number of black men and women under probation and parole. And of course, now we are supposed to look at those statistics and compare them between black and white. And because we see more blacks arrested, more blacks in jail, more blacks in for probation and parole, we are supposed to make the illogical assumption that blacks are more criminal than whites. I told you time and time again, ladies and gentlemen, that in a society that's based on lies, as this one is, in a society that can only exist based on deception, that truth is reversed. That's in essence what a lie is. And therefore, when you look at the so-called statistics that seek to establish the criminality of black people, turn it around and turn them around, and you will recognize that the criminals are outside the prisons. We don't have time to talk about it tonight, but that's the value of having power, you see. You can make criminal whatever you want to make it. You can legitimize your own criminality and perverseness. You can call virtue a crime and arrest people for being virtuous. And then you can look at the statistics and say, aren't they more criminal because they are in jail? Some of you read the recent situation here in the Hasidic community where a bunch of Jews ran out, broke arms, and hurt the police, what, about 2 or 3 dozen policemen. This, of course, comes after a time when they broke into a police precinct station and ransacked it. How many of those people went to jail? How many got fingerprinted? How many of them are in prison? And so forth. And yet, can we say that they did not commit a crime? You see, what do we have here then? A situation, you see, where if you use crime statistics, you're not going to find those Hasidic Jews in the statistics. You're not going to find them on the prison rolls. You see, that's what power does for you, isn't it? It permits you to commit a crime and keep yourself out of jail. And then you can go into the jailhouse and look at the statistics and compare the number of blacks arrested on probation, on parole, and compare them with Hasidic Jews. And say, well, I see one is very big and the other one is very little. Therefore, the blacks must be more criminal than the Hasidic Jews. You can never be more wrong in your life. You have to understand. But we have to get away from that. You know, and this is the kind of teaching that goes on in the university today. Understand that when white boys and white girls are not on the rolls, the prison rolls, and in the prison populations, it points to the efficiency of their criminal organization. How do we say that? A mafia don who has a very efficient criminal operation, who can create a murder incorporated, who can engage in drug trafficking and killing and murdering and extortion, the same kind of games I've been reading to you here tonight, can earn so much money until he can keep his children innocent. Keep them out of jail. Give them good educations and the whole bit. You understand what I'm getting at? In other words, those children's names do not appear on the crime blotters. They are not in the jails. because their fathers are such good mafia operators. So even their innocence speaks to the efficient criminality of their fathers. And because then the white boys are not in jail with the black boys, do not make the assumption that means the white boys are less criminal or their fathers are less criminal. It means they just have a criminally efficient operation. We got to move on here. This country then is an imperialist criminal operation because it robs the people at home, and you see it as it robs the people abroad. It constricts the black males to fight its criminal wars. It maintains worldwide terror and extortion. It, of course, maintains the criminality in Namibia, South Africa, Angola, Panama, Grenada, Central South America, Zaire, and the whole bit. I accuse this nation of being a criminal nation because it engages in the health neglect of our people. This nation, as determined by its own task force, indicates that black and minority health, in the area of black and minority health, there are 60,000 more minority deaths per year based on an expectation of equal death rates for blacks and whites. As a matter of fact, melanin gives you an added lifespan. So what are we saying here? That this society, due to its neglect of the health of black people, excesses the lives of some 60,000 black people a year. This is murder. It engages in child neglect and child abuse as it maintains the infant mortality rate of black children to more than twice that of white children, as it maintains a measles rate 16 times that of white children, as it maintains the poverty of our black children, increasing the poverty of black children at the rate of some 750,000 children a year. It engages in educational neglect, as it engages in the miseducation of our children, as it refuses to fund the Head Start and early childhood education programs, as it refuses to fund the education programs under Chapter 1. And I wish I had the time to read the statistics here of how our children are killed and our families are destroyed through educational neglect. This criminal society then sets up the psychology of black-on-black violence by creating a sense of powerlessness in our young people, by projecting negative stereotypes upon their mentality such that they seek to escape an African identity and alienate themselves from their African selves and internalize the values and perceptions projected by the dominant society, as their appetites are distorted so that they literally then eat themselves to death or desire things which will destroy them, as it frustrates them such that in their anger they turn against themselves, as it makes them displace their anger against their fellow victims. This society is a criminogenic society because it serves as the best model of criminality. The black-on-black criminal has learned from the best of teachers, the white-on-black criminal. It engages in criminality as it supplies weaponry to our children and alcohol and drugs. How does this relate then to our adolescents? Recognize that almost 50% of the young men who die between 15 and 24 die as a result of homicide, black-on-black homicide. This would be a major health problem if we were another ethnic group. Recognize that the cream of the African race is being destroyed before it has a chance to reach manhood. Homicide is the leading cause of death of black males between 15 and 24. Is it because, ladies and gentlemen, if you look at the demographic situations in this country, we are producing and outproducing white people in terms of children. Must understand that. At a rate of almost 3 or 4 to 1. The Hispanics are outproducing them about 5 or 6 to 1. That means the larger part of the up-and-coming population is going to be black and Latino. And these people have already written about the birth. And so what do we have here then, ladies and gentlemen? The destruction of a race and the destruction of that group that would move us toward being a majority in this country. So this has a lot to do with adolescence. And adolescence, of course, is a major point in the development of an individual's life, because it is during adolescence that the self-concept is being developed, that the individual is undergoing an identity crisis, a gender identity crisis, that the individual is dealing with the issues of self-esteem, dealing with the issues of body image, which is the reason why you see them getting caught up in clothes and other adornments. It is the period of time when an individual looks for social affirmation and social acceptance and looks forward to social belongingness. It is a period of time when the emotions are labile and unstable, and therefore the individual is seeking to bring his emotional, sexual, and other drives under control. It is a period of time when the individual is wrestling with social acceptance, wrestling with alienation from the adult society, the society in general, and alienation from itself. It is the time when the person is engaged in intellectual development. It is a time when the individual is asking and trying to deal with moral questions and make vocational choices. It is a time of egocentrism, a time of status striving and being concerned with clothing and cars and other things. It is a time when the person deals with invidious comparisons. That is, how do I make myself look good by making other people look bad? And therefore, when you look at this social system, it strikes our youngsters at their most vulnerable periods of their lives and seeks to transform them. Now, you may say, some of you who are older, well, you know, we wrestled with the same thing. But keep this in mind, you see, that though these issues are issues that may have been a part of my generation and earlier generations, that these issues are taking place within a different social political context. They're taking place within a different socioeconomic historical context. And it is these contexts that combine to determine whether these issues will develop into positive outcomes, negative outcomes, or conflicting and ambivalent outcomes. So today's black adolescents, particularly the poverty-stricken adolescent, exists in a world that is quite different from the world of his parents. Very different from the world even of the 50s and 60s, because we have a youth now that is engaged in the post-industrial age. When you dropped out of school, there were jobs waiting in some factory or on some shipyard or some other place for you. Those jobs are not there today. And so you have to recognize that these youngsters are dealing with a different world. The computers weren't there when you dropped out at the time and when you miseducated yourself. These are children who are engaged in an information age. These are children who are engaged in a highly urbanized world. These are no longer farm boys and rural people from the rural South caught up in their rural communities. These are kids raised in the ghettos, in the projects, and in the poverty-stricken areas of the urban cities. These are children then that are raised in an information data processing world, a world of television and mass media, a mass media that recognizes that they have money or that they can get money, and now a world that instead of just selling to adults makes teenagers its major marketing audience and therefore creates desires and wishes and plays the cruel hoax on our teenagers, are provoking their desires through TV, through singers, through Ray Charles talking about Pepsi, to black religious music, and then does not provide them the means by which they are to get the things by which their appetites have been provoked to desire. Recognize this then, ladies and gentlemen. Recognize that we are dealing at a time of rising expectations. You see, when we grew up, we knew that there were certain slots for us, and we didn't have to worry about the other ones. Now we live in a world of rising expectations. Be the best that you can be. Be all that you can be. We see the result of that. These youngsters are living in a time of family dissolution. Remember, the largest percentage of black children up to the 1950s were raised in a two-headed family. Now we are dealing with children where the vast majority of families are single-headed and in poverty and caught in their situations. So don't be too quick to put yourself in this place and compare yourself in your time to the children in this time. You're dealing with a different time. We're dealing in a time of conservative governments and a conservative world situation. We are dealing in a time of world and national demographic changes. These children are growing up in a time, as we said earlier, where there's an availability of weapons so that they may kill themselves, where the escapist drugs have moved beyond alcohol and twister wine and moved into devastating crack, and a type of drug now that didn't involve hustling 50 Cent to get a bit of Thunderbird, but that now must involve constant hustling, robbery, and even death to get a whiff of crack. A type of drug situation and an escapist drug situation that creates a totally different social structure, a totally different attitudinal structure, such being that the black community is held in terror and families are being destroyed and robbed by their own sons and daughters. Recommendations. We have to go quickly here, but I'm going to get it in. You'll have to catch me at another time. Yet, and we had to, but I've got to mention the recommendations at least, because we have to move beyond analysis. So let me quickly just run through these. Pardon me if I'm going fast here. If this is a climatogenic society, and it is, then we recognize that the people that our major problem is not being left out of the American mainstream and being left out of the system. We must recognize that we cannot join a criminal system because we will become criminals in it. Golden Power represents the apotheosis, the ultimate of what a criminal system is. He represents what it means to move up in a criminal society. In moving into that system and becoming integrated in it and assimilated with it, he must now become allied with this criminality. And if that system then is dependent upon the death and damnation of black people, upon the imperial subordination of black people, then those like Colin Powell that move up in this system must also then engage in the death and damnation of black people as well. We have to keep that in mind. You're not moving up into this system as it is unless you're also moving against the interests of black people. And therefore, you have to recognize that the goal of our people in this climatogenic society is to change the very nature of the social system, to tear it apart and to reconstruct it, to bring into being that word that Bush stole from us, a new world order. Our mission is much higher than assimilating into this system. It must be to create a new world. If this climatogenic society creates a sense of powerlessness in our children, then we must, as a people, develop and use our power. We must take power and train our youth for taking and expressing power positively. If this system destroys the attitudes of our people through projection and projecting on them criminality, we must inoculate our children against evil white projections by inoculating them with truth and the truth of themselves, inoculating them with self-knowledge. We must inoculate them against projection and the internalization of negative attitudes by getting them into the knowledge and the psychology and the ways of their white enemies, and getting them to have an efficient perception of reality and remove their deceptions. If they are alienated from themselves and are infused by an evil white spirit who is implanted in their minds and bodies to serve the will of its devilish masters, then we must reclaim our African-centered identity, and we must reclaim an African-centered consciousness, and we must learn to love ourselves and love each other and engage in cooperation and communalism. This is how we prevent alienation. If the society twists our desires and makes us desire the things that destroy us and hate the things that advance our interests, we must learn a new set of values, inculcate deep and abiding cultural goals, learn to discern when one is being manipulated and exploited. Our children must learn the mechanisms of advertising, mass hypnosis, subliminal suggestion, conditioning, and lies and propaganda. They must learn to be productive so that they can produce for their own desires. They must learn to assume the ownership of the means of production and learn self-control. If the society moves our children into black-on-black violence because it engages them in frustration and the dealing with their frustrations in incorrect ways, then we must train our children to be task-oriented, to solve the causes of problems and not engage in dealing with the symptoms of problems. We must teach them to discern the sources of their frustration and remove those sources and tear them out from the root. We must teach them how to use their anger and aggressive feelings positively. Every emotion that is in the human mind is there for a positive reason, and they must be used for positive reasons. Anger is a positive emotion if it is used correctly. So is aggression. God did not put anger and aggression in you just for negative purposes alone, but we must be taught how to use those things. We must teach them to be resourceful and how to get around those frustrations, to develop social intelligence, skills, and competence. We must teach them coping strategies for stress. If they displace their anger and use their anger to attack themselves and destroy themselves and to destroy others like themselves, we must get them to know their real enemy. We must get them to recognize that this enemy, this white man, is only a man, that he bleeds and dies like any other man. We must read to him the history of our African fathers as they cut down and mowed down the white man, and how they were only betrayed by their own cupidity. We must have them understand that. Let them read the story of the Egyptians as they cut, the Ethiopians as they cut down the Italian armies, and read the stories of the other Africans as they cut down the white armies. Bush thinks he's gotten away with this little game, but it's not over. It's not over. By the very fact that he engaged in this war, we now know what his game plan is. We now know his weaknesses and his strengths. As a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, his strength is his weakness. Understand? And we're going to teach our children how to tear up the soft underbelly of this dragon and this monster called white America. I was down in Tuskegee last weekend, and I saw the Chappie James Aerospace Center. Interesting. But one thing we've learned about this war here is that once we get an Air Force, we're ready. And so we're going to set him up. The only thing that got this man across was he was not resisted in the air. And we will meet him in the air and on the ground.
Recognize that the white man can be defeated, that he's not invincible. We must teach them that the displacement of anger at self or at others like at ourselves makes matters worse and is self-destructive. If they are having problems with their self-concept, then we must give them great support. We must affirm them and affirm their identity. We must teach them confirmations so that they know how to make positive statements to themselves and affirm themselves. We must teach them how to stop negative thoughts and change the nature of the situation that they are in. If they are engaged in violence and black upon black violence, we must teach them how to resolve conflict between themselves without destroying themselves. It means then that we have to develop relevant educational programs. We have to develop a parallel school system. We have to make this government by hook or crook fund the health care systems of the local and state localities of our people. We must emphasize prevention in the black community, change the lifestyles of our people who are literally eating themselves to death, or whose lifestyles are literally destroying their health. My next book is going to be on black health, by the way, and I'm going to show how the death wishes, how we carry out the death wishes of whites through our eating and health habits. Because they wish that we will die, we accommodate them by drinking too much Pepsi and all the other things. We're going to emphasize critical problems. We must develop programs to ensure adequate prenatal counseling and care. We must develop systems to neutralize the climagenic system. We must set it our goal, not the assimilation to the society, but the elimination of this society as it is. We must set it our goal, economic development, the development of the economic status of our people across this world. We must engage in the development of a nation within a nation. How can the people keep saying that they are kept out of this society and are separated and segregated from this society and not use that to their advantage and create a nation within a nation and get ready to fight the other evil nation in the society? We must engage our people in consumer education, withdraw from those entities and those industrial systems and so forth that are a part and partial of the destruction of the black community and the communities of Africans. We have to stop buying those Nike sneakers and Reebok sneakers that sell 70% of their wares to black people while they refuse to even franchise black stores to sell those sneakers. We must stop buying Ford Motor Company cars when they take out those car factories from Detroit and import them into Polish and other neighborhoods. And after we get through with Ford, we stop buying GM. And after we get through with GM, we stop buying Toyota and the rest. We will not subsidize the destruction of our people. We must develop an African-centered, full African-centered educational program. We must educate our males. It is very important that we pull these males aside and train them for manhood, train them for husbandhood and fatherhood, and train them for the military so that they undertake the overthrow of the system. We must engage our young people in political education so that they will learn how to engage in the political overthrow of their enemies and organize themselves politically. We must train those of us who want to go into this church into a new theology, that it is not enough to paint the face of Jesus or to paint the face of angels and still believe in the same Eurocentric ideology and theology. We must go into these prisons and take our men from these prisons. These are the men who must be used to defend our community. They must be rehabilitated on the lines of an African-centered philosophy and on political lines and military lines so that they can use their aggression now, not against themselves or against the nation of African people, but against the true enemies of African people, the white man. We must develop regional conferences in our nation within a nation and a national congress so that we can coordinate and facilitate the talents of our people who are engaged in various aspects of the political, social, and economic reorganization of this country. We must build schools for leadership. We must build schools that engage in policy development and analysis, and schools for developing strategy, schools for developing a military machine to protect us against the interests of Europeans. Recognize that there's one thing that's clear, that the imperialistic system has only one constant, and that is self-interest. And when it is in its self-interest to destroy and wipe black people from the face of this earth, it will engage in that activity. You have the history of the Indians in America to show that, that when a people are economically not useful to the Europeans proceed to annihilate those people. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, we must prepare for revolution and prepare for war. Thank you very much.
We're going to entertain questions. Excuse me a second. Hold me a second, please. We have your attention. Two things. One, I want to forewarn you of the program next Friday. It'll be George Bush's New World Order, neo-fascism, old-fashioned white racism, and Western imperialism recolonization. It will deal with also a comparative analysis of certain leaders in the world and Adolf Hitler, to answer a question put forward before by some last year sometime by Brother Egbert Hall, of who Hitler is, or who is the new Hitler. So we're going to deal with that next week. One of the speakers who will be invited is Lenny Brenner to discuss Yitzhak Shamir, the leader of Israel, and his past relationships with Nazism and fascism. And the other speakers are still being organized, so that's next week. Okay, what we want to do is have questions for those people who have questions. The microphone to use is right over there. You know, we're going to have to hold up on the signing of the books because you can't ask the questions and sign the books at the same time. You ready?
Yeah, becoming correction officers and how it changes their attitude. I used to promote the idea to try to get brothers to go into the police force and to go into the army and be correction officers with the idea of trying to get people on the inside. What do you think about that idea after, you know, with the present situation now? Do you still think that is a good idea, or is it something that we should not even bother to undertake?
It's a good question. It's just that I think that between the brother and myself, not to be disrespectful, but I think it was definitely adequately answered. I think the question was answered in that to become a part of this system is to become a part of a criminal enterprise. Okay? From my personal experience, it's as I said, the house Negro has done more to usurp the potential growth and development of the black liberation struggle than actually the white man has. And I'm talking about in my time as a Panther and as a soldier in the liberation struggle. Because white folks didn't know what 8 points of attention was. Not until the house nigga went and told them. You see? And these house Negro guards are put in these plantations for the express written purpose of being able to interpret certain idiosyncrasies along Afrocentric lines that the white man, even today, is incapable of interpreting within the context of perhaps insurrection, etc. Okay, just to show you how confident these crackers are, I was sitting over there, I was talking with Alombe, right? And I was telling him that according to military science, black people and prisoners in particular, because in this country, this government has the right to kill prisoners if this country looks like it's going to be overthrown, okay? So they have the right to kill prisoners because we might have some hostility toward this government that gave us injustice, etc., and put us on those plantations, okay? But now, we would also represent a fifth column if we were organized, as the brother so eloquently spoke. Why? Just to show you how these crackers feel, they weren't worried about us doing anything because they sent a whole contingent to the Persian Gulf, and they weren't worried about a national insurrection because they know we ain't going to do nothing. They know we ain't going to do nothing but jump up and down, talk crazy, march, and threaten white folks. You see? And that's the game of this whole thing, man. See, because, you know, I promised my oldest daughter, she's 28, I said, you know, I'm not gonna do no more talking. And I very seldom even do this. Alombe can tell you, because, man, I'm tired of talking, man. You know what I'm saying? I haven't done that much talking. You know? The talking I do, man, is like Mao said, it should be clearly understood that all major decisions will be decided on the battlefield. You see, it's sad. I don't want to belabor the point, but it's sad because the doctor spoke very clearly that to become a part of this operation, man, is to be a criminal. You see, because it was a criminal enterprise, it was a criminal intent in its initial stages of development. Okay, it was criminal then to put the same kind of chain, that when they put the chains on brothers and sisters and brought them here, it's the same chains that they put on us to bring us from here to Clinton. And it's the same people putting them on the same people. Now, like Malcolm said, see, the house Negro represents the Novocaine, like Malcolm was talking about when the doctor's going to take your tooth and he squirts some Novocaine in your mouth to make them think you're not doing anything to you. Now it's the house Negro putting the chains on you in the name of the slave master's law to make you think that they're not doing anything to you or that you're going to get a better treatment. But I've seen incidents and have been involved, personally involved in incidents wherein the slave master had to come and drag Tom off from beating a brother to death. Now last year they killed four brothers in the Bing right here in New York City in HDM. They killed four brothers in that Bing, man, beat to death. There was a Captain Litchfield who was a known member of the Nazi Party. And when IG Inspector General's office had him moved due to the efforts of people like Alombe, Sonny Carson, and quite as kept Roger Green. Something Roger Green from my district in Fort Greene in Brooklyn. and had this cracker moved. Well, the vendettas that was carried out subsequent to that move was carried out by a black captain named Captain Eric Durbin with his whole crew, and he's a house nigger. You see what I'm saying? And what they do is they come by your cell to, well, it depends. Sometimes they'll come by like soon as you get 1 hour of recreation every day. When you come in from the yard, they let each brother out one at a time and take a shower. What they usually do is wait till you get in the shower, and they roll on you, and I'm talking about beat you down. You see, so the house nigga, he loved the master more than the master loves himself. If the master gets sick, he say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick." If the master's house gets on fire, he try to put it out with his hand. I'm the field nigga. I pray that the master die, and I've made sure that the master died on past occasions. You see what I'm saying? And I'm not afraid to do it again. Okay? Peace.
I'll be with one of them.
On behalf of this great African community, we would like to thank you for this magnificent lecture that you have given us.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
We have two short questions. Number one, when will you be returning? Number two, to those of us who are not cognizant of this new world order, kindly enlighten us as to how South Africa fits in with the new world order. Thank you.
I want to, I will leave that third question to Brother Kalambe, whose specialty it is, and who's now in the process of developing a paper around the new world order, and we'll fit that in. I want to speak, I apply to the first part of the question as well, in terms of the situation of our people in the police department and the prison systems. And I just say, of course, we have to start assuming authority in our own community and policing our own community, number one. The other thing is that most of these, what we call house Negroes and people who are employed in these prisons, get away with what they do because the black community does not have a punitive arm outside of those prisons. And if we could set up a network between those that are in and those that are outside, and when those brothers leave for the evening who are abusing our people in, and they know that they have to deal with a community and there was an arm to deal with their betrayal of their interest, of the interest of our people, then we can begin to transform the situation. To a very great extent, the people who betray us get away with what they do get away with because they do not fear us as a people. When they are made to fear this black community, and when they learn that this black community has an arm that will not permit traitors and betrayers of this community's interests to go home and sleep well at night, then you'll change things.